It's Jazz Week on Fresh Air. Next, we hear from one of the great vibraphonists, Gary Burton. That's Gary Burton with pianist Chick Corea, recorded in 1972. Burton was self-taught on the instrument, and he became a technical innovator as well as a lyrical interpreter. In the 60s, he was a pioneer of jazz fusion. In the 70s, while recording for the ECM record label, he helped create the reflective sound that label became known for. In 1971, he began teaching at the Berklee College of Music in Boston, where he became dean of curriculum. In 96, he became an executive vice president of the college. Back in the 60s, Burton studied at Berklee, but he left the school to go on the road with George Shearing and then Stan Getz. In the 90s, Burton became one of the few jazz musicians to come out of the closet as a gay man. I spoke with Gary Burton in 1994. I asked him if it was a revelation when he first listened to great vibraphonists like Lionel Hampton and Red Norvo.
First thing I discovered was that I didn't play technically like the established players. Milt Jackson was the most famous vibist of that day, and at the time, his style, you know, he is a two-mallet player, and I had been playing with four mallets because I played alone all the time, and it was too empty without some harmony, and I wanted it to sound more complete, so I had continued experimenting with four mallets and learned to play the instrument somewhat as a solo instrument and as treating it as a keyboard instrument. And when I finally heard other players and saw them play later on, I realized that my approach was drastically different from the norm. And in fact, instead of becoming influenced by other vibraphone players, I turned to piano players to be my influences. And probably I could list three or four piano players who were the most important in terms of shaping my style of playing.
You use usually two mallets in each hand.
Right.
Does the relationship of one mallet to the other in one hand remain constant? Are you always playing the same interval?
No, they're changing. You think of them, in fact, as fingers. It's as if I'm playing a large piano keyboard, and I've got four fingers, and I'm constantly changing the positioning of the four mallets or these four fingers to make different chord combinations. And I use them singly as well to play single notes. It's not always just four-note chords that are going down. It's a constant variety between single lines and contrapuntal lines and voicings that may be two notes, three notes, or four notes.
One of the first bands you went on the road with was Stan Getz. Pretty lucky break, I guess, to get started like that. But Getz has the reputation of being maybe moody would be a good a good word here.
I see you're up on your jazz history.
So what was it like when you were a young man? I think you were still a teenager. Getting started with somebody who was A, that good, but B, that temperamental.
It was a real education, and in fact, even years later, when I would run into Stan, we would laugh about it, and I would tell him that, you know, what an experience it was to spend 3 years working with him, that in some ways he taught me all the things that I shouldn't do in terms of how to approach my career.
You mean by through his example?
Yeah, but at the same time, he was one of the most marvelous musicians and that I've ever known. And I learned so much from him, just from watching him play and how he dealt with the music and also how he dealt with his career. He was a very kind of intense and volatile person. So he was, you know, he really wore his emotions on his sleeve. And so that was a total opposite from me in just in personal approach to things. But it was a good education because Stan was representative of a type of artist. And I have met other people through the years who remind me of Stan. And whenever I find myself working with someone who is this type of artist, I always say, ah, okay, I know how this works. I know how to deal with someone like this. I know how to work cooperatively with them because I had 3 years of experience with Stan, and that got me used to this.
Gary Burton, recorded in 1994. We'll hear more of the interview in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations, by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873, online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN, and from Wilmington Trust, recognizing worth in individuals and in unique programs like Fresh Air. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Hey, kids! What time is it?
It's Halloween movie time!
Coming up, Jazz Week continues with an interview from our archive with the late trumpeter Lester Bowie, a founding member of the Art Ensemble of Chicago. Also more with Gary Burton, and Henry Sheehan reviews the new film, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's Jazz Week on our show. Let's get back to our 1994 interview with vibraphonist Gary Burton. When we left off, we were talking about his early career when he played with Stan Getz.
Did he do anything to test you or to intimidate you early on?
Oh, immediately. the first encounter with him was sort of an audition. This was at a club in New York called Basin Street East, and he was actually looking for a piano player, but had been unable to find someone available and needed to find a replacement for the musician in his band, and someone had told him that I played vibraphone with four mallets and that perhaps I could substitute for piano. So he had called me up and told me to come down to the club with my vibraphone and sit in for a set and see what it sounded like. So I did, and it didn't go well at all. I didn't know many of the songs they were playing and or their arrangements, and I was kind of intimidated by Stan, who just his very presence sort of would make you nervous. And about halfway through the set, I was never sure when to accompany. I didn't want to get in the way because I didn't know the songs too well. So I would only play chords and comp occasionally just so he could sort of hear what it sounded like, but I didn't want to try to do too much and become a problem. But he apparently thought I was, holding back and so on. So at some point in the middle of the set, he got totally red-faced and turned to me and sort of yelled, how come you're not comping when I'm playing? You only comp when he's playing. Is there something wrong with my playing? And it so, terrified me that I could hardly play at all for the rest of the night. And he said, well, didn't work out, so thanks anyway. And I figured that was the end of it. But he called back a week later because he still hadn't found anyone, and he was desperate now because he had 3 weeks of dates booked that were to start a few days later. And so he called me back in desperation and asked me would I do it anyway, even though it was clear that he didn't like my playing. And because the other guys in the band were friends of mine, I thought, well, you know, I'll have a good time anyway. It'll work out. I'll do it. And for the first week, he didn't like anything I did and would yell at me all through the times we were playing. He would tell me to lay out. Because when my playing would start to bother him, he would make me stop, and he'd play without me for a while. But by the end of the first week, I had begun to figure out how to fit into his band and what would work musically. And by the time the 3 weeks were up, it had settled into a nice combination. And so he said, well, why don't you stay on for the next tour? And then that ended up being for 3 years.
When he didn't like what you were playing and he told you to lay out, this was at a club in public?
Yeah, this was at, actually it was a tour of Canada. We were playing clubs in Montreal and Toronto. And so in the middle of the song, he would turn to me and yell the word stroll, which was kind of an old musician's term for the accompanying, the comping instrument to lay out. It was called strolling.
Isn't that embarrassing, humiliating to be told that in front of an audience?
Actually, it was. I had quite a bit of pride in those days. I guess maybe I still do, although it's tempered somewhat through years of experience. But at the time, I was it was considered a hotshot student from Berkeley, and I thought I was quite the player. And to have him, you know, clearly unhappy with my playing was kind of a new experience to me. Anyone else I'd ever played with before always seemed to be pretty happy with what I was doing. And it was kind of a strange experience to have somebody who was so visibly agitated by my playing. But I noticed something during that 3 weeks that was a big revelation to me and started changing my playing, and which Stan was responsible for. I noticed that there I was, the hot young player, and I would solo my heart out when it was my turn, and then I would watch Stan when it was his turn, and he would play a lot fewer notes than me and a lot simpler. In many cases, he would play almost just the original melody of the song, just kind of paraphrase it a little bit, but play it so expressively that I'd look at and the audience would just be totally captivated by what he was doing. And I woke up to the fact that there was something to do with how you handle melody mm-hmm. that I hadn't really noticed or given attention to before. And I said, here's something I'd need to learn about, and this looks like the guy to learn it from. So it was an important time for me.
Let's hear Gary Burton recorded with Stan Getz in 1964 from the album Getz A Go-Go. The song is Only Trust Your Heart. The singer is Astrid Gilberto.
Never trust your dream when you're about to fall in love, or your dream will quickly fall apart. So if you're smart,
Gary Burton with Stan Getz and Astrid Gilberto. I spoke with Gary Burton in 1994. You've done something that I think exceptionally few jazz musicians have done, and that is you've come out And I believe you've been out at the Berklee School of Music, where you teach, for about 5 years. But I believe now you're kind of coming out in a more public way. And I was wondering why you feel ready to do that now.
Well, sort of a combination of my own personal timetable and this changing attitudes, I think. Earlier on, I didn't think that people were ready to deal with that. And jazz in particular has a very macho kind of image to it. And I felt that I didn't want to confuse people who were following my music and kind of mixing up my personal life with an image that might confuse them. And but as time has gone on, I have felt a greater desire to just be myself and, you know, live openly what I am and who I am. And I also have felt increasingly comfortable with society's growing maturation on the subject, and felt like it would not be as drastic an issue. And so a few years ago, when I started being more open, first with friends and then where I work and people I play with, musician people in the industry and so on, I was very encouraged by the fact that I got nothing but supportive responses from people and encouragement from everyone. And that convinced me that it was the right thing to do, and it's certainly been a refreshing change in my life.
Were you afraid that musicians wouldn't be accepting?
I was. I was worried about it, but I was really and frankly pleased to find that there was no change in my work pattern at all, that the same people were happy calling me up and happy working with me, and in fact would go out of their way to be supportive and encouraging and to tell me that they thought it was just great.
Gary Burton, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Vibraphonist Gary Burton, recorded in 1994.